From HowStuffWorks.com, this is The Stuff of Life.
Welcome to The Stuff of Life. I'm your host, Julie Douglas. The Earth is wrapped in an atmosphere that weighs 5.5 quadrillion tons. And inside this atmosphere, the weather creates a crazy quilt of conditions. Consider that in December 2015, a weather system over Texas delivered tornadoes and floods to one part of the state, while the other part of the state experienced record snowfall. To say that the weather is unpredictable is to sum up our entire existence. And to personify weather in this way, well, that is deeply entrenched in us.
This is a mode of thinking with a very strong ancient pedigree. I mean, we have an extremely dominant predisposition to believe that weather events are aimed at us and often in reaction to our behavior. I mean, look at all the people throughout history who have thought that weather events are punishments for sin. If you did something wrong, the gods are going to send a storm at you.
Which is why we find solace in charting the chaos that is the weather.
Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 30th of September. There are warnings of gales in Dover, White, Portland, Plymouth.
John P. Swaddle, a professor of biology we talked to in an upcoming episode, fondly remembers these BBC shipping forecasts.
I can't do it now, but when I was a kid, I could recite most of the shipping forecast areas in order because they go through them in almost a sort of sing-song type of way. And they're all called things like the 40s and stuff like that. And they go round the coast, basically, clockwise, I think. And they'd say each one of the shipping zones and then what the weather would be like. And it just sort of rattled off. And when I was a kid, I used to listen to it on the radio because it used to come on basically after the news at 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening and stuff like that.
These forecasts have been a tradition since the 1920s, when citizens of storm-lashed coastal cities in the UK settled in for the evening, the theme music of the broadcast sailing by a serene backdrop for their thoughts as they sussed out what the following day might look like. This kind of weather prognosticating is one of the oldest human activities and persists as a topic for discussion, dissection, and even obsession.
Good morning. It's March 12th, 2009, and it's a Thursday. Here in LA, mostly blue skies, some white clouds floating by, muted golden sunshine, very still, 52 degrees Fahrenheit, 11 Celsius.
For a while, film director David Lynch gave weather reports for the greater Los Angeles area. His Midwestern accent and the relatively stable conditions of the Southern California climate give a sense of continuity, that life might always be drenched in muted golden sunlight. While his forecasts aren't exactly an American counterpart to the UK shipping news, they do offer a sense of order in the face of roiling chaos and confusion that bubbles under the surface of the American experience. Weather, then, becomes the metaphor for our existence. Awe-inspiring, unpredictable, mysterious, something we consciously and unconsciously organize our lives around, even coloring our emotions, something author Lauren Redness explores in the weather phenomenon, the doldrums.
That word just struck me because the doldrum seems to indicate a psychological phenomenon as much as a meteorological phenomenon.
But first, let's take a detour into the ways in which weather makes a dent into our psyches.
I'm Joe McCormick. I'm a writer and host at How Stuff Works, and you can find me on my other podcasts, Stuff to Blow Your Mind and Forward Thinking.
I'm Holly Fry. I'm an editor, and I co-host Stuff You Missed in History Class.
I'm Dylan Fagan, and I'm the photo researcher here at How Stuff Works, and I have my hands in many different pots around the office.
Weather is so much a part of the story of our existence that when we step into an unfamiliar situation, or maybe even a slightly awkward one, like, say, an elevator, it is our go-to topic for discussion.
I think it's the most surface level conversation that you can start with a stranger. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in that it's a thread that ties us all together. We all go outside. We all see what's going on. You know, we all have that common experience. And it is cliche, but it also could be a door opener, an icebreaker to get to know someone a little better. You know, it could just be for the elevator, or it could be, gee, it's hot day out there. Sure is. So what's your name? You know, it's a jumping off point if you look at it optimistically.
It's how you start to get into somebody's head to do the long con.
What's your name and social security number?
The weather ain't what it used to be when it comes to safe topics. Global warming, climate change, weather's clearly having a moment.
We close here tonight with more unusual weather.
Australia is in the grip of another December heat wave.
It's part of the wild weather in recent weeks.
Forecasters are warning of more chaos as fierce storms and floods continue to batter the southern United States.
Nobody that is living has ever seen anything like this.
What do you guys think about the names we have for all these storms and weather events now? Is that, I mean, so we've been naming hurricanes for a long time, but now we've had these winter weather events that get names in the media, like Snowmageddon and Snowpocalypse and the polar vortex, which I guess is a different thing because that's a real scientific term. But you see these come up in the media a lot. Is that new, or have we always been doing that?
Well, we haven't always been doing it because we didn't even always have like a weather service that, you know, worked on these predictions. But I certainly think I don't remember storms when I was a kid in the 70s and or 80s having these cockamamie, like, full-on drama with a musical stinger under them names, right?
Yeah. Like,
ba-bum, this is the one, you guys. I don't know it's the one what.
This leads Holly to muse on a unified theory of weather sensationalism.
I mean, I have this whole thing completely separate from weather where I feel like there's this perpetual competition in that 24-hour news cycle and the social media angle where there's this perpetual competition to be the cleverest. And so people all want to come up with the kicky name for everything that happens. And that's where Snowmageddon comes from.
Once in a generation storm, a historic and deadly winter storm shuts down the southern U.S.
I was super scared. I was like, if I don't get home to my parents, I'm like, I'm going to freak out.
State troopers sent in to rescue small children and
it's
teachers.
Like they can't just say, we're having this weather event. There's serious snow. There is a bad traffic situation because everyone released every school at the same time and all offices shut down. And so all of these people got trapped on the interstate. They can't say that. They have to go, Snowmageddon.
And hey, if we're going to the trouble of giving weather systems dramatic names, we might as well go one step further and saddle these systems with the responsibility of our personal suffering.
I feel like sometimes weather is like a scapegoat for your problems. I mean, in my opinion, you know, when it's 70 at Christmas and you think like, well, that's that El Nino or that's climate change or, oh, it's so cold, that's the polar vortex. You know, whatever kind of weather phenomenon that you're hearing about on the news, it gives you something to blame for why things are abnormal.
I should mention that we all live in Atlanta, Georgia, also known as Hotlanta.
I want to pick up on something you said there about it being 70 on Christmas, because I always have this feeling that, I mean, I like nice warm weather. I like nice sunny days when it's warm out, and especially when it's nice in the winter when it's otherwise been cold. But I hate it when it's hot on Christmas, and it's frequently hot on Christmas around here. And it's just awful. It just feels like it ruins the holiday. It ruins the spirit of it. It's not really Christmas because you're sweating. It's just gross and you hate it. And I think it's weird that we give that kind of emotional power and association between certain feelings or events and how it's supposed to be outside.
Yeah, I mean, if it's hot during December, I refuse to wear shorts because they're Christmas lights. You know, it's like it just ruins the holiday feeling when it's 70 outside and you see a dude in flip-flops. You're like, no, that's not what I'm used to. That doesn't fit this ideal in my head that I have from, you know, television and movies and when I was a kid and I remember it snowing.
have to confess that hot Christmas isn't my thing either.
Well, I tend to think of winter as this time to symbolically fold into yourself.
You
know, just it's getting darker out earlier, and it's sort of this time to just mentally hibernate, or, you know, that feels safest to me in the winter. Like, yes, this is okay. I'm going to be depressed probably because I always am over Christmas. And I also get angry when it's 70 degrees on Christmas because that just feels like it's underscoring all the weirdness that is and the tension and stress that is Christmas.
See, now I feel guilty because when it's 70 on Christmas, I feel like it's a gift to me. And everyone else is apparently miserable.
You've done the human sacrifice that made that happen, and now Julie and I are just having to stew and feel betrayed.
I didn't think about that. I think you caught something interesting there. Like when it's 70 on Christmas, it just adds the unpredictability and the tension and the weirdness that is getting together like that. It adds a certain weird level of anxiety.
Here, weather is disrupting the narrative that our Western culture has told us about how Christmas should be. But it goes deeper than that. Weather can actually shape our moods.
I think it's interesting that looking at like a 5 or 7 day forecast on your phone, for me personally, can determine what my mood is going to be. Like I can already predetermine how I'm going to feel that day. Like, oh gosh, it's going to be cold and rainy on Sunday. That's going to be awful. You know, or it's going to be really nice on Monday. I'm really excited about that. That's going to make Monday better. Like it can drag you down or it can pull you up.
I hate being cold so much. I have winter rage disorder, not a real disorder, one I made up, but people often think I'm like citing a doctor when I say, no, I have winter rage disorder. Bring it on. I'll wear red and green shorts in the winter. I don't care if I need my holiday fix. I would rather be on fire than be cold. I live in the South for a reason. Bring on 70-degree Christmas.
All of us have, at one time or another, taken weather personally and shaken our fist to the sky. Some even feel like they could control the weather.
We did an episode once on Crown Prince Sato of Korea, who was suffering with some very real mental illness, and he thought his clothing choices would affect the weather. Which kind of, he was already dealing with a lot of stuff and he was prone to fits of violence, but he really felt the burden of that, you know, if he wore color X or robe Y on a certain day, it could potentially impact the entire world. And that's a lot to carry on your shoulders. So in a lighter way, thinking that the weather is mirroring us, does that happen to you? Are you like, I made it rain with my sadness?
Wasn't there a Georgia governor who, there was a drought in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, we're going to pray for rain.
Ask and you shall receive. Just one day after Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue led a prayer service for rain on the steps of the state capitol, the rain fell. It sounded and felt pretty good last night here, I have to tell you.
We do believe in miracles. We do believe that you are the miracle creator, the creator that established the water and the land and the air and even us. God, we need you. We need rain.
So it's still in some form, continues today, this feeling that you can influence the weather based on an action or clothing or mindset.
This influence is an ancient idea that we just can't seem to quit.
Weather patterns that change over the seasons are definitely a cycle, and you can see it happen in real time. And that is certainly reflected in ancient beliefs too, because lots of ancient gods are seasonal gods. You know, their mythologies are derived from the seasonal changes. So you have gods that are killed and then reborn in the same way that your harvest, you know, all the plants are killed by the winter and then reborn in spring.
But whether the elements are the realms of gods or mortals, it all comes back to the sense that it's just deeply personal.
My great-grandmother was still in her 70s when I was growing up, and she would be the one to pick me up from school in the afternoons. And usually on sunny days, I would go outside once I got home and play basketball for hours until my parents could pick me up. But on rainy days, My grandmother was a great cook, and she would always have either leftovers or something she just made. And because she came from a time where food was scarce and her way of showing love was cooking, she always wanted me to eat when I got home. She didn't have cable. She had this little black and white TV, and it got PBS. And I remember at 3 o'clock, it was Mr. Rogers. But at 3:30, it was The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross. And I would sit there, and she would have made macaroni and cheese and green beans and turkey. And I'd sit there, and I would watch Bob Ross as the rain fell. And in my mind, that is just like a blanket wrapped around me. It's the warmest memory I can think of from my childhood.
Rain is the most emotionally evocative weather event that there is. In movies, it's a handy signifier for a heightened emotional state. Whether it's a melancholy character staring out of a rain-splattered window, or a couple kissing under a deluge, you know, just completely oblivious to everyone else and bursting under their desire for each other. That is how effective of a metaphor rain is. So much so, its rainbow-producing abilities, that moment when we get to briefly see white light split apart into its brilliant component colors, that moment of a rainbow could even inspire a book.
I had finished my previous book, Radioactive, and I was chatting with a friend, and we were actually taking a walk one day, one of those days where the weather changed really rapidly, where it rained, and then I think it even hailed, and the sun came out, and there was this terrific rainbow, and you know, kind of as a joke, I said, you know, oh, I'm really burnt out. The book I just finished, for which I had to learn a lot of physics, and I'm not a physicist by any stretch. And so I just said, ah, my next book's going to be about clouds and rainbows. As I heard myself say this, I realized that I wasn't kidding. And this spectacular panorama of the sky that we take for granted is, to me, such an interesting subject because it's hidden in plain sight.
Lauren Redness is the author of 3 books. She's been a Guggenheim Fellow, an artist in residence at the American Museum of Natural History, and a finalist for the National Book Award. She teaches at Parsons, the New School for Design. Her newest book, Thunder and Lightning, Weather, Past, Present, and Future, is an exploration of and meditation on the ways that humans cower, celebrate, profit from, and even try to control the weather. Her accompanying illustrations stir the senses that we associate with those elements of weather. The opening chapter, titled Chaos, spells out the ground rules for the book with a story about a cemetery.
So my mother-in-law told me this story. She was a minister in New Hampshire, and she heard about a town not too far away from her where a friend of hers is a pastor. The floodwaters from Hurricane Irene had unearthed the graves in the cemetery. And I was so struck by that idea that, you know, this very most basic premise, you know, you die, you are buried. Even weather can even upend that basic assumption about life. So I wanted to start with that kind of unraveling and then through the book try to put the pieces back together.
That weather disabuses us of the sense of continuity and stability makes it that much more important for us to track and predict. And to that end, the Old Farmer's Almanac has been predicting the weather since 1792. Founder and editor Robert B. Thomas came up with a secret forecasting formula.
So the Old Farmer's Almanac is, you know, this publication that's been around since before George Washington was president. It predates electric light. It's one of the very first books that a colonial American family might have had in their home. The way that they predict weather is using a secret formula that's held in a black box, which they have at their headquarters in New Hampshire.
This mysterious black tin box is the stuff of weather legend. It's been passed down from editor to editor, and it was thought that that person and that person alone would set eyes on it.
I was talking to Judson Hale, who was editor of the Almanac for many, many years, and I asked him, I said, you know, have you ever seen this black box? And he said, as casual as could be, oh yeah, here it is. You can look in it. And he picked it up off the floor and he handed it to me. and I was just stunned.
In Thunder and Lightning, Lorne documents this moment, describing the black box as, quote, dusty. It was black with gold trim, about the size of a tackle box or a makeshift coffer that might be used for cash at a bake sale. The lock was open. Inside were a few leathery spiral notebooks, two keys with clover-shaped heads held together on a jumbo paperclip. There were a number of loose documents, some typed, some handwritten, and one envelope.
This one envelope that was stamped, confidential, confidential. So I opened it up and I began to read through this system for predicting weather, and it read like a riddle.
Lorne was given permission to copy the formula and share it with Greg Carbon, a meteorologist from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
He said to me, this meteorologist, well, it's rather hard to follow. And it's a beautiful document. It's, you know, all about the moon cycles and the atmosphere and the solar system and sunspot. And what struck me was that actually to read this secret formula, to have the mystery unveiled, actually did nothing to destroy the mystery itself, because weather is endlessly unpredictable and no formula can give us a key. And in fact, reading this document, I had that sense that the mystery only deepened, because the mystery of weather forecasting is bigger than the old farmer's almanac, and weather prediction will always, no matter how our science advances, it always seems to be just beyond our grasp.
Just beyond our grasp and yet directly influencing us. As Lorne explains in her chapter on wind, specifically with the example of long-distance swimmer Diana Nyad, who in 2010 planned to swim from Cuba to Florida for three straight days and nights, a feat that would require little or no wind.
I read something about Diana Nyad preparing for her long-distance swims, in particular from Cuba to Florida, and how she waited for a windless pocket of weather, which she referred to as the doldrums. She connected weather to climate and to these grand metaphysical questions. She talked to me about some of the thoughts that flood her mind as she swims for days out on the open ocean, and she said to me, it's a very small planet. I'm thinking about the melting of the polar ice caps. Where are we in the universe? Will the Earth last forever? Will the human race last forever? And you can just picture her, this tiny, tiny body in this vast, vast ocean, you know, and she says that she pictures all the animals swimming beneath her, and she can see the stars sparkling above her.
While waiting for the easterly winds to change in Key West, a sailor took Diana out on a deck.
She says, can you taste something gritty in your mouth? And so Diana, you know, she says, we're all standing there with our tongues hanging out. And she says she does. She tastes something gritty. So she just assumes it's sea salt. You know, that makes sense. There they are on the edge of the water. But no, her friend tells her that this is actually sand from the Sahara that's blown over clear from Africa across the Atlantic. And it just struck me, that idea, these tiny, tiny specks that have crossed the ocean, almost like, you know, a butterfly making its migration, this tiny speck of sand that made it from Africa all the way to the east coast of America.
This moment crystallizes the link between ourselves and the rest of the world, removing a sense of distance.
Time kind of collapses, because, like, when did that wind blow over the Sahara? And suddenly the globe seems particularly small.
When we talk about nature, we tend to think of all the things that we can see: trees, flowers, animals, and insects. But at its core, nature is the unseen, the forces that come together to allow our very existence in the first place. Think of the sun's radiation beating down, driving life cycles, warming and cooling molecules until they become air movement, then wind, then gales. Nature, then, is weather. And weather is brutal and riotous, but it also contains its own kind of symmetry and breathtaking beauty, the same kind of beauty that we gape at when we wonder about our existence. where we are all under the weather.
But now, it's time for me, Mairead Devlin, on behalf of all of us here at Broadcasting House in London, to wish you a very safe and peaceful night. Good night.
The Stuff of Life is written and co-produced by me, Julie Douglas. Original music and sound design is by co-producer Noel Brown, and editorial oversight is provided by head of production, Jerry Rowland. Thank you to Lauren Redness for discussing thunder and lightning weather, past, present, and future. You can learn more about her work at laurenredness.com. And thank you to Holly Fry, Dylan Fagan, and Joe McCormick for sharing your thoughts on the emotional life of weather. If you like what we do here at The Stuff of Life, visit us on Facebook and Twitter, and please consider supporting the show by reviewing us on iTunes. In the meantime, email us at thestuffoflife@howstuffworks.com.